people's behaviors. You're looking at a lot of random behaviors. When you look at people, there's a lot of things they do that you do not categorize because you don't know about categorizing it. So I'm going to tell you how to categorize it now. Whenever two people communicate face to face, they communicate across three basic channels. They all begin with V. Verbal, vocal, visual. The verbal channel are the words that somebody uses. The vocal channel is the intonation, the inflection, the way the words are spoken. The volume, the speed, the pitch, the resonance, the emphasis. And visual, the body language, the facial expressions, the eye contact. All three channels, and they are communication channels, verbal, vocal, visual, all three added together constitute 100% of the meaning of a message that somebody is conveying to you. Now, which is most important? Are they equal? Is one more important than another? Well, research study after research study after research study shows that the vocal and visual are more important than the verbal. In non-technical communication, basic social communication, a vast majority of the meaning is vocal and visual, not necessarily verbal. How do you tell somebody's lying? How could you tell? What do you listen for? What would you look for? The eye contact. The eye contact. When somebody's lying, you've read it. What do they do with their eyes? They don't look at you in the eyes. But let me ask you a question. How many people know that, when somebody's lying, they don't maintain eye contact? How many people have heard that before? Can I see your hands? Don't you think the liars know that too? The liars know that. But see, what they do is they overcompensate with their eye contact. They stare too much. But there's other ways. Watch their body language. Watch their hands. Especially children. When children are not telling the truth, they'll hide their hands. When somebody's not being totally honest with you, sometimes they'll cover their mouth as they're talking like this. There are a lot of little subtle things people look for. What is sarcasm? Sarcasm is taking verbal and then adding vocal to change the meaning of the verbal. There is something called the voice stress analyzer. Anybody familiar with it? You're familiar with it? What does it do? All right, so it measures the stress in the vocal cords, because when you're lying, it puts more stress on those vocal cords. Now, this is a product that exists. You can hook it up to your telephone. When your husband or wife calls up, says, I'm working late tonight. And it'll tell. It's like a lie detector test for the voice. But notice, this is the vocal aspect as opposed to the verbal aspect. So all of it is crucial. All of it. By the way, what does it mean when somebody crosses their arms? They're closed. Are you closing me out? What are you doing? Being comfortable. And therein lies one of the most important points in body language, in visual. That basically, there are very few body language gestures that have meaning. Because if you look at one gesture, you can take it out of context. I can see several people with their arms crossed, but arms crossed can mean you're cold. Arms crossed can mean you're relaxing. Arms crossed can mean that you're shutting me out, but you've got to look at other aspects of the body language. Trying to take one individual gesture and interpreting what it means is like taking a word out of a sentence and trying to interpret what the sentence means. Now, me, I'm Italian. We have certain gestures that mean things, but we won't get into that. There are exceptions. But when you put a lot of gestures together, they equal a cluster. Put a lot of words together, it equals, hopefully, a sentence. Just like many words equal a sentence, many gestures equal a cluster. And you look, if somebody's shutting you out by crossing their arms, usually you will see other things. Usually you will see them also crossing their legs. Usually you will see them pulling away from you or turning slightly sideways. Usually you will see them not maintaining eye contact with you. There are a lot of other things you look for.
In fact, by the end of this program, you'll have the skills to get a quick reading on almost anyone. You do that by learning to read the clues. Again, they come in three forms: verbal, vocal, and visual behaviors. The verbal channel includes the words we use, or, to put it another way, the content of our speech. The vocal and visual channels, such as voice intonation and body language, convey the intent of the message. The simplest way to start sorting out the behavioral types is to just listen to their verbal clues, how much they talk, and what kinds of words and phrases they use. Extroverts talk more. Two of our behavioral types, the director and the socializer, are outgoing, fast-paced personalities, as we've already learned. Of course, they're outgoing in different ways. One's a commanding personality, and the other is more of a natural showman, an entertainer. But neither is shy. They both tend to talk a lot and do so energetically. So, for starters, if you meet someone for the first time and they come on strong, they're likely either a director or a socializer. That's your first clue. Conversely, if they're quiet and soft-spoken, they're probably a relator or a thinker. Those two types, more naturally introverted, are not so quick to assert themselves or reveal what they're really thinking. So, right away, when you can peg someone as assertive and talkative, or low-key and reserved, you can cut by half the possibilities of which style they are. So already, you're 50% there. The second verbal sign is what people say: their words, their pace, and especially their priority. Directors, as we've seen, are aggressive, results-oriented people for whom getting the job done and accomplishing tasks is very important. They're not shrinking violets, so you can expect them to speak quickly, strongly. They tend to listen less and talk more, usually making emphatic statements rather than asking questions. Be alert for these kinds of statements from a director.
Tell him I want to talk to him ASAP.
Let's get this settled right now.
What's the bottom line?
Cut to the chase. What are the options?
Here's how we'll proceed.
I want to win this battle. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Tell me what the goal is.
You handle it, but keep me informed.
I don't want excuses. I want results.
Get out a pen and write this down.
You've done a great job on this. That's all there is to say.
Whatever is going to move this forward, get us closer to that final goal. Well, that is our next step.
One, it costs too much. Two, it's not the way we generally do business. And three, four, and five, I don't like it, I haven't ever liked it, and I don't expect to like it in this lifetime.
Get together on your own time and figure it out. And only come to me if there are major problems and you've exhausted all your own resources for dealing with it. I don't want to put out any more time or energy on this. Is that clear?
That's a director for you. Strong and talkative, but in a way that moves the discussion firmly ahead toward his or her most prized goals. Results, victory, solution, tangible progress. Now, the socializers are also outgoing verbal people. But as you'll recall, they're more sociable, playful, and fun. They're more oriented toward people than tasks. Like the director, the socializer is talkative, in fact, usually downright chatty, but their words will have a different ring. They'll be much less direct and seldom authoritarian. So the socializers are more inclined to include you in the conversation and to be less aggressive about results. You could expect to hear a socializer tell more stories and jokes and say things such as,
"Hey, here's an idea. What do you think?" Why don't you noodle on that concept for a while?
I feel this is the way to go to.
Tell me what you think about...
Spare me the details. Just give me the drift.
I think we're making good progress. Now let's just...
My sense is that...
Let's try a different way, just for kicks.
This one will really blow the wind out of their sails.
Before we get into the thick of it, how the heck have you been?
I think we should order a couple of those things that guy over there was talking about. He seemed to be shooting pretty straight from the hip, don't you think?
Between us, we should be able to come up with something that will cover basic needs, and we won't walk out of the deal looking like complete idiots.
Just from the few minutes I've been here, I can tell the way this thing is going to go, and I'm not sure if it's worth hanging around for all the fireworks.
If this thing flies, I am not only buying you a bottle of Dom Perignon champagne, but I will personally drive the limousine that takes you to the opening. Now, is that appreciation or what?
Again, a socializer's talk will be more about people and ideas. Words like feeling, impressions, team, concept, and ideas. Socializers see life as more of a celebration. They don't want to triumph as much as they want to be liked and to have everyone enjoy themselves. Okay, let's say that this person you meet isn't talkative or chatty. They don't start off acting as if they've known you for years or as if they've been put in charge. In fact, when you meet them, they're quietly pleasant and low-key. You get a sense of a bit of a gulf separating you from them. So clearly, what you have here is either a relator or a thinker. They both tend to be a bit quiet and introverted. They're seldom aggressive or loud. They listen more and talk less. When they do speak, it's often with questions rather than direct statements about their own thoughts or feelings. They're the kind of people who probably wouldn't plunge into a crowded room, but instead would take a few minutes to scope out the goings-on from the sidelines. Observing that, you can eliminate director or socializer. But how do you distinguish between a relator or a thinker? Well, again, listen to what they say. Relators are friendly, sensitive people, maybe a bit indecisive or even acquiescent. They like to ask the opinion of others and wouldn't think of forcing their views on someone else. They like stability and being accepted. So you'll probably hear them saying things like,
I'd like to go kind of slow on this. Is that okay?
Have we determined the impact of this on the staff?
I feel uncomfortable with that change.
I'd like to help you however I can.
We can work this out, I'm sure.
How do you really feel about this?
How's this likely to end up? I'd like to know first.
I hope you don't mind if I go ahead and try to...
You really have put a great deal of thought into this. I am impressed.
I'd prefer if you went ahead and made a proposal, and then I'll know roughly what you have in mind, and I can respond.
Can we stop for a moment and talk about our personal feelings about the situation before we get into the heart of the negotiation?
I can see what the numbers say, but I want to know how this is going to affect people involved on a day-to-day, real-life level.
Before you start jumping to conclusions or assuming anything about our ulterior motives, I'd really appreciate it if you'd hear me out fully and let me explain exactly what led us to these conclusions.
Those are clearly relator-type statements. Now, thinkers are also reserved and slower-paced, but they're not as concerned with being part of the team and avoiding risk at all costs. They're very independent people. They're much more into getting things done than the relators, but in a much more understated way than the directors. Here are the kinds of phrases you might hear from a thinker.
Now let's look at this logically.
Is that really the right thing to do? Can we justify that?
Let's take this first step, then we can decide step two.
Give me all the facts first.
What guidelines make sense for this project?
Precisely what do you mean?
I don't want any surprises.
Have we touched all the bases?
Don't apply the general to the particular.
Actually, you would say uninterested. Disinterested means not having a stake or investment in a particular endeavor.
There's a flaw in the thinking here somewhere, and I want to figure it out before we go on.
Well, if we work according to that hypothesis, it will be impossible to evaluate any results and determine the project's effectiveness until after the go-ahead has been given.
I love it. It's clear, concise, absolutely sensible, and at the same time, it'll appeal to those who have an aesthetic sense in such matters.
I see. That could be a problem. What do you think is causing that to happen? What options do we have for dealing with this kind of thing? It was not in the original contingency plans.
So, to summarize, if the person you meet is reserved and low-key, you can first assume that they're likely to be a relator or a thinker. Then listen to them. If they're warm, friendly, and talk a lot about people, feelings, and togetherness, you've probably found a relator. They see life as a team effort in which the goal is to work together amiably without making too many waves. A thinker, on the other hand, is also reserved, but has a bit of a sharper edge. They want to solve problems, get things done, make progress, but all in a non-obtrusive, orderly, low-key way. Thinkers see life as mainly a management problem. First, figure out the tasks, then accomplish them by patiently and carefully applying facts and logic. The bottom line here is, you can go a long way toward figuring out someone's personal style by paying attention to their verbal clues. But we don't just speak words. Our voices are sophisticated instruments, and we use them to send many signals about how we're feeling and thinking. Let's say you enter a business meeting a few moments late. You open the door, and your boss, who's chairing the meeting, says, "Look who's here." From those words, can you tell how your boss was feeling about your arrival? Annoyed? Grateful? Disgusted? Or happy? Sure you can, because you're getting more information than just the words. You get information through such voice intonations as speed, inflection, pitch, resonance, rhythm, and volume. These vocal clues are not about what's said or how much is said, but how it's said. Well, look who's here. Well, look who's here. Well, look who's here. Three little words, but the vocal clues are very different in each one. Now, each of the four behavioral styles has a range of vocal characteristics. Directors and socializers are confident, outgoing people, so they speak quickly with confident-sounding intonations. Directors, especially, communicate forcefully and with an intonation that often seems to carry an implicit challenge. Socializers, good storytellers that they are, have the most variety in vocal quality of any of the four styles. So they use lots of inflection. And as they share their personal feelings, they greatly vary the pitch of their speech. Relators and thinkers, on the other hand, usually speak slowly and often come across as more contemplative and perhaps less confident. Relators normally use a steady, even-tempered delivery. They often project warmth and sincerity in their voices. They silently announce, "I'm a friendly person, but I'm neither pushy, nor do I like to be pushed." The thinkers probably use the least inflection of any of the four, often speaking in a monotone, calm, measured voice, and with few variations in pitch. Their voice doesn't tell you much about what they're thinking. You sense they're neutral, trying neither to charm you nor control you. There's one other obvious external indicator of style: the visual, or what's known as body language. This can take many forms. For instance, facial expressions, or lack thereof, hand and body movements such as touching, pointing, and gesturing, eye contact, whether steady or intermittent, and even spontaneous dramatic actions like leaping up from a chair or giving someone a hearty slap on the back. Not surprisingly, directors and socializers again come across as emphatic, assertive people who make strong first impressions, good or bad. Physically, too, they take the initiative. From directors, you'd expect a firm handshake, steady eye contact, and frequent gestures, often a jabbing, stabbing motion as they speak, to back up their strong statements. Their body language, like everything else about them, is fast-moving and frequently suggests impatience and power. Similarly, the socializer employs a lot of hand and body movement while speaking and is probably the most facially animated of the four. Big smiles, furrowed brows, cants of the head, and quizzical looks come to them as naturally as breathing. The socializer also is the most inclined towards spontaneous touching. A reassuring hand on the shoulder, a fond pat on the back, a big two-handed handshake. Eye contact by relators is intermittent. Sometimes they'll even look at the floor rather than directly at you. Handshakes are more tentative and gentle, and their slower moving body language suggests calmness and patience. Poker-faced is a phrase probably first coined about a thinker because they make few facial expressions or gestures. Further, because they have a strong sense of space, they're not inclined toward touching. Okay, four behavioral styles. Each one has its own characteristics, and one way to sort them out is to identify particular verbal, vocal, and visual clues unique to that style. Now I'm going to give you a very simple way to synthesize your understanding of all these concepts, something that puts it all together for you, so that you'll have a model that you can refer to in using this platinum rule approach with people.
I said people send out signals about how you should treat them. I've taken all these diverse signals and I've combined them into two basic categories. One category is openness, the other category is directness. Two basic patterns of behavior that we want to observe in people. The first is openness. Is the person that I am observing, that I'm dealing with, is this person exhibiting more open behavior or more self-contained behavior? Number two, is the person exhibiting more direct behavior or indirect behavior? Now, there are a series of behaviors, clues, signals that people send out that all you need to do is just look for these. So let's start with open versus self-contained. How do you tell the difference whether or not somebody is exhibiting more open or self-contained behavior? This is what you look for. Self-contained people come across as being more guarded. In other words, they do not show or share their feelings and thoughts readily or willingly. They play their cards, what do we say? Close to the vest, hard to read. They share information only on a need-to-know basis. If they believe you need to know something, they'll dole out the information a little bit at a time. If they believe you don't need to know it, they're tight-lipped. These are the people who keep a distance physically and mentally. Physically and mentally. There's a whole field of study called proxemics. Proxemics is a study of personal space and territory. Self-contained people have a very strong sense of territoriality and personal space. And all of us, whether you realize it or not, every single one of us has an invisible bubble around us. And that bubble is how close we allow other people to get to us early on in a relationship before we start feeling discomfort. The self-contained people, their bubble is further out than the open people, whose bubble is a lot closer. And that's why when you take a typical open person and a typical self-contained person and put them together, one's going to want to get closer, the open person, and the other's wants to keep that distance. Now, self-contained people, their bubble of interaction, where they don't want people early on in a relationship to get too close, how far out would their bubble be? What do you think? About how far out? Arm's length. Very good. About arm's length. And that's why we say about some people, you got to deal with that person at arm's length. And when you deal with self-contained people early on, within that arm's length area, they start feeling discomfort. Now me, I'm a New York Italian. Our bubble was burst at birth. Whole different attitude. Self-contained people tend to be task-oriented, focused, get to the point, bottom line, efficient, cut to the chase. I have a friend who is very self-contained. I think he takes this too far. I mean, when he calls my house and my wife answers the phone, he says, Sue, Dennis, Tony. Self-contained people make decisions primarily based on what? What would you think? Facts, logic, numbers, data, documentation. That's why when you deal with self-contained people, you have to have all your facts, the logic. It has to be laid out the proper way. You have to have your documentation. At the other end, we have open people. Now, how do open people differ? Open people readily and willingly show and share their feelings and thoughts, whether you want to know them or not. Right? Any subject, anywhere, anytime, fair game. More animated facial expressions and body language. They show a lot more, visually and vocally. You tell them something exciting, they say, when? I don't believe it. When did it happen? Whoa, I don't believe it. Something upsetting. They get upset with you. Very visual. Now, their personal space, their bubble, is a lot closer. Whereas the self-contained people, when they meet you, may greet you in a more formal and proper basis, maybe a handshake. How do the open people greet? A lot closer, more physical. See, open people greet with what? Hugs and what? Kisses, and they frequently take advantage of it. They're physical people, and they make decisions primarily based on what? Feelings, emotion, intuition. That classic open person is my mother. Oh, she is unbelievable. When I take her to a restaurant for my mother is simply an extension of her kitchen. Right? You have a picture of what an Italian mother is like, a New York Italian mother? A few years ago, I take her to a restaurant in Las Vegas. Any poor couple who had the misfortune of making eye contact with her was fair game. So she's walking in the restaurant like this. Hi, how are you doing? Hi. Hi. Right? It's like her kitchen. It's like her restaurant, right? And she's walking, and somebody makes eye contact with her. And she walks right up, and she says, Hi, my name is Margie. What's yours?
Henry.
Nice meeting you, Henry. And by the way, it just so happened that at this restaurant, this night, my mother picks him. It was Henry's birthday. She said, Henry, are you here at the restaurant for a special occasion?
Yes.
What is it?
My birthday.
Your birthday. How old are you?
36.
He lied.
She goes like this. Excuse me. Henry here is celebrating his 36th birthday. Let's sing him happy birthday. And she sings him happy birthday. Then when that dies down, she goes back and says, Henry, what do you do for a living?
A nurse.
A nurse? And what kinds of stuff do you do?
A case coordinator.
A case coordinator. That sounds rather interesting. Do you make good money doing that?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
How much? Any subject is okay. Now, this actually happened. She says to Henry, Henry, introduce me to the young lady you're with. Your name?
Donna.
Hi, Donna. How you doing? Okay. Donna, as I was speaking to Henry, I noticed something that bothered me, and I wondered if one of you can clear it up for me. I noticed that Henry, he had a wedding ring, and Donna, you didn't.
Well, I'm not his wife.
Would one of you like girlfriend. To? Would one of you like to explain that? I got plenty of time. Henry's sweating here. But I don't want to give the impression that open people are all like that. But I think you get the idea. And open people, when it comes to time, what's their attitude? Hey, when I get around to it. When I get around to it. When a self-contained person says, I'll do it in a minute, it'll be done in what? 60 seconds. When an open person says, I'll do it in a minute, when will it get done? We don't know. We don't know. How many of you feel that you're in a relationship with somebody, marriage, dating, whatever, where you are either open or self-contained and the person that you're dating or married to is the exact opposite? Can I see your hands? All right, probably a good 50-60%. And of course, If you're in a relationship with somebody who is the exact opposite, one of the key problems is time. You have arguments about time. Because the open person is always saying, I'll be home around 6. Right? They don't say, I'll be home at 6. It's always around. I'll be home around 6. But what is the self-contained person here? I'll be home what? At 6. 6, 6.15, 6.30, 6.45. All of a sudden, the open person walks in and says, I'm home. And what irritates the self-contained person even more than the person being late is that they don't even know that they did something wrong. So anyway, open or self-contained. What I want you to do is just based on my descriptions of open versus self-contained people, where do you see yourself most of the time with most people? And I realize we all have the ability, depending on the situation or the person we're dealing with, to come across as being more self-contained. And in other situations, we can come across as being more open. Is that right? We could move up and down that scale, but all of us have a home base, a comfort zone, a habitual pattern of behavior that we exhibit most of the time with most people. And that's what I want to know. What is your habitual pattern?
That's one half of the model or grid I was talking about. Imagine a vertical line, a continuum from top to bottom, where open is at the top and self-contained or guarded is at the bottom. And we all fall somewhere on that continuum from very open, to somewhat self-contained or guarded, to very self-contained or guarded. In the next segment of the program, I'll give you the other dimension. Directness versus indirectness. Put that continuum on a horizontal line from indirect on the left to direct on the right and add it to your vertical dimension of open to self-contained or guarded, and bingo, you have a four-quadrant grid. Four quadrants, four styles, easy. Stay tuned.
Let's go to the other scale, direct versus indirect. Now, directness is a measure of pace. Directness is a measure of assertiveness. We find that indirect people, slower pace, direct people, faster pace. Now, when I say slower and faster, I'm talking about the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they make decisions, the way they do things in general. Faster, slower. We find that indirect people, less assertive, direct people, more assertive. Indirect people, more introverted. Direct people, more extroverted. Indirect people, more patient. Direct people, impatient. Indirect people, more cooperative. Direct people, more competitive. Indirect people tend to listen more than they talk. Direct people, well, you know. A couple of months ago, I was at the airport. And I learned long ago that when there's a problem, a mechanical problem with a plane, a weather problem, all the yelling, screaming, protests that I might, you know, give, is not going to make the plane take off any sooner than it's ready to take off. So I learned, hey, chill out. Sit back, relax, watch other people. I love to watch people at airports. I mean, it really is. You see the gamut of emotion from people coming off planes and being greeted by people they haven't seen in years. It's very touching, emotionally touching. And, you know, see business people greeting each other. But also, watch what happens when a plane is late. I was sitting at the airport. There was a weather problem. Some planes were going out, others were not. So where I'm sitting, there are two gates. There's a gate A and a gate B. At gate A, the flight's getting ready to take off in 15 minutes. At gate B, the flight isn't even scheduled to take off yet. But there are two agents working behind gate B. I don't know what they're doing, but nobody's there because there's no sign up for a flight. At gate A, there are two agents working, and there are about 15 people standing in line. Plane's going to take off in 15 minutes. So, you tell me, direct or indirect? business person walks up, comes to the end of this line, right, and goes like this. I don't believe this. Talking to himself, I don't believe this. Plane's going to take off in 15 minutes. There's 4, 8, 12, 15, 16 people in line. I'm number 16. If they take a minute a person, I don't get on the flight. You would think that they'd staff better. They know that some planes are going out, some are not. They only have two people working this gate. You would think they'd put at least a third person. You know, there's gate B right next to us, two people working there, nobody there. Figure maybe they can take half of us. I hate when this happens to me. I guess they're doing the best they can with downsizing and re-engineering, but it's frustrating. As that's going on, another business person comes. And he comes in like this. Oh, I don't believe this. Look at this. Come on. Oh, no. Do you believe what this airline's doing to us? You're killing me. You're going to take off in about 10 minutes. There must be 20, 30 people in line. Come on, you think you'd staff better. I don't believe this. I'm sick of this. Hey, what are you two people doing over there? Help out over here. Now, you know people react differently. Under stress, we find that the indirect people take flight. The direct people engage in fight. I got to tell you, first 18 plus years of my life, I was born and raised in New York City. And I was assertive by New York City standards. Right? I mean, I really was. I learned a very valuable lesson. Very important story here. I learned a crucial lesson. I moved from New York City to San Diego. When I moved to San Diego, I practiced the golden rule. Treated the people in San Diego as if they were New Yorkers. Here it is 19 years later. Now, I was in a couple of places in between, if you're adding up how old I am. But a couple of places in between. And to this day, 19 years after moving to San Diego, there are still some people who have never forgotten and never forgiven how pushy, aggressive, and assertive I was when I first came into San Diego, and still to this day will not do business with me. I did learn my lesson. I learned how to tone down. I recaptured a lot of the people that I initially irritated. But isn't that what happens all the time? Sometimes we come across as we feel comfortable. That was my perspective. It always worked for me in New York. But when I got to San Diego, it totally backfired. All I needed to do was practice what I preach. When it comes to risks, decisions, change, indirect people approach all three more slowly, cautiously, and methodically, because indirect people have a tremendous inner need, inner driving force, not to be wrong. Slower, more cautious, more analytical. They don't want to be wrong. Direct people, when it comes to risks, decisions, change, they approach all three more quickly, decisively, spontaneously. Because their inner driving need is to achieve and accomplish as much as possible. Get it over with, move on to the next thing. Whenever there is a conflict between quantity and quality, indirect people focus more on quality. Fewer things, do them just right. Direct people, more things, hey, it's good enough.
So where do you stand on the indirect to direct continuum? Here's another clue. In a given month, indirect people may try 10 things. 9 of them are successfully completed. Their success ratio? 9 out of 10. Pretty good. They feel good, maybe wondering why they didn't get 100%, but they feel good. Now, the direct people in that same month try 30 things. 18 of them successfully completed. Their success ratio, 18 out of 30, or 60%. Now, the question is, what's better? Is it better to have better quality, a 90% success ratio for the indirect people versus 60% for the direct people, or is it better to have more quantity, 18 absolute successes for the direct people versus only 9 for the indirect? What's better? Well, I'll tell you something. If I were hiring a salesperson to do some selling in a new territory, maybe even a new product, a new service, where there's lots of rejection, which type would I go for? Direct. There's no question about it. But if I were going in for brain surgery, which type would I want for a surgeon? I mean, there's no question. Now, if you take the open self-contained continuum and put it on a vertical line with open at the top and self-contained or guarded at the bottom, and then make a horizontal line with indirect at the left and direct at the right, you have a four-quadrant grid. Four sectors created by a vertical line and a horizontal line crossing each other. It's what I call the platinum grid. The upper left quadrant is where indirect and open come together. This is also a way to describe relators. The upper right quadrant is where direct and open come together. That's the socializers. The lower left is where indirect and guarded come together. That's our thinkers. And the lower right is where direct and guarded come together. And that's where we find our directors. Directors and socializers are often grouped together, as are relators and thinkers, because of some of the basic similarities in their pace. Directors and socializers tend to be talkative, animated, and fast-paced. Relators and thinkers tend to be more quiet, restrained, and slow-paced. But, as you may have noted by now, it's not quite that simple. Beyond those most obvious parallels, there are other connections. We can group the four styles differently based on priority. The quiet relators and the assertive socializers, for example, both are people-oriented. The brash directors and the introverted thinkers both give a high priority to tasks. So, figuring out a person's pace and priority are good ways to make an initial determination about their style, but they aren't enough to give you a definitive reading. To pick up on other differences, we use the platinum grid. It's really the key to learning how to identify and to adapt to personal styles. The platinum grid, with its four quadrants, helps you place a person in one of the four basic behavioral styles. What you've got is a very simple way to understand what I've been presenting so far. To begin to determine the style category of yourself or another person, you need to pay attention to their pace, are they fast or slow, and to their priority, are they people-oriented or task-oriented. Next, look at their verbal, vocal, and visual clues. Then you need to ask two simple questions. Is this person more open or more guarded? That's question one, more open or more guarded. Question two, are they more direct or more indirect? The answers to those two questions will land the person into one of the four quadrants, directors, socializers, thinkers, or relators. Now imagine that you're nervously waiting outside a big glass-walled office. Soon, it'll be your turn. You'll be giving the new boss his initial briefing about your department. His predecessor was a low-key, friendly guy who liked to put his feet up on the desk, hand out cans of Diet Pepsi, and kick around the pros and cons of issues during long meetings filled with great detail and lots of personal observations. So, you've carefully typed out an agenda of 13 departmental items, some with multiple subparts, and you've thought long and hard about how you might introduce each of them in a distinctive way. But then you notice the new boss has already brought in a bigger desk and hung lots of awards and commendations on the wall, a departure from the Spartan surroundings of your former boss. And though the new manager has been on the job less than a week, he's quickly earned a reputation as a blustery, fast-talking workaholic. Now you see him pacing. He's agitated, pointing his finger vigorously at another department head. Even through the glass, you can hear him haranguing about results, results. You anxiously wonder, should I change my game plan? The short answer, yes. This boss is nothing like your former one. Rather than go in with your long laundry list of problems and opportunities, you'd get off to a much better start with this new guy by preparing a quick executive summary and a proposed plan of attack. Why? Because your old boss and your new boss do not share the same behavioral style. They're different. And so you must treat them differently. But first, you must be able to identify each person's style. That's what we're going to practice in this segment. How you can turn your observations into a quick, accurate fix on anybody. Soon, you'll be able to spot directors, socializers, relators, and thinkers as easily as you can tell a sports car from a station wagon or a semi-trailer from a dump truck. Once you determine people's styles, you'll understand their goals, fears, motivations, how they process information, and most importantly, the way they want to be treated. So let's practice identification a bit. You'll hear a pair of people talking. Both of them are the same behavioral type. See if you can tell which type they are by their verbal and vocal clues. I'll start with an easy one.
You want to know what makes me tick? I could write a book about it.
I could make a music video about my life.
Well, my life could be a feature film, directed by Steven Spielberg, of course.
Your good buddy Steve, right?
He's a friend of a friend.
Slight exaggeration.
Always. It's a poor storyteller who can't tell it better than it actually happened.
So, you want to know about me? I love people. I love to gab. I just love to schmooze. In fact, I have a bumper sticker that says, Born to Schmooze. My life is an open book. The only person who is more revealing than me is Madonna, and that's only because she has a better publicist.
I'll tell you what she really loves. She is the consummate party animal and social butterfly. She loves making a grand entrance. She loves glamour, being flattered by everyone she meets, anything that grabs attention. The more the merrier.
Me? How about you? He's the kind of guy who can make friends with anyone. Standing in line at the grocery store, he'll start up a conversation with total strangers. Of course, I love it, too. Life is never dull. He's the same way in business. His gift for gab has helped him find more deals.
My wife's motto is, never waste an audience. She's very enthusiastic about everything she does, especially when people are watching.
I admit, I can be very entertaining and persuasive, and I'm an expert at charming people into buying what I'm saying, which is why my careers in sales and motivational speaking have been great for me. I develop rapport with people quickly, and I'm able to get them pumped up about their work.
She can't get herself pumped up about cleaning off her desk.
Oh.
What a mess. She needs an assistant to organize her life. I even have to set her watch at least 10 minutes faster so she'll be on time for appointments.
Okay, so nobody's perfect.
If you guessed socializers for these two zany people, you're right. Direct, open, talking about themselves, entertaining. That's our socializers. Now, try to determine which of our remaining three types these two people are.
My friends describe me as sensitive, warm, and supportive. I have a lot of empathy for people. When I see someone in pain, I really understand their pain. I'm easy to get close to. I guess I'm a good listener. People share their problems and successes with me all the time, and I like that.
One of my desires is to help people. In fact, my world revolves around personal relationships. And the part of my job that I like best is getting together with people in my office and working with them as a team.
I was recently offered a promotion at work, but I turned it down because it would have meant more time on the road and less time at home with my family.
Money's not so important to me. I just want to be content and be able to provide for my family. If I won the lottery, I might give half of it away to charity or share it with my family and close friends.
I'm uncomfortable around people who are self-centered, pushy or insensitive, like people at work who delegate without being sensitive to your feelings. I freeze up when that happens. I know I need to work on that.
Yes, I agree. I prefer to be asked to do something than told to do it. This is especially true when someone is rushing me to finish a project faster than I normally would. I tend to be slower than some people, but I'm methodical, reliable, and I finish things I start.
I can be oversensitive and take things too personally, especially when people don't take the time to find out how I feel about something. It's partly my fault. I don't always speak my mind.
Ah, lots of clues there about which type these people are. These people are open, like the previous socializers, but they're much more reserved and indirect about their feelings. They're sensitive and don't like to be rushed. And they're empathic. These are relators, aren't they? Now, what about these two people?
You might sum up an individual like me with the axiom, I think, therefore I am. This may sound funny, but a great number of pleasures in my life are cerebral. I like to use my brain. I love brain teasers, puzzles, people who can be intellectual sparring partners, and quiet reading or thinking time.
I'm quite similar. People say I'm a logical person. In fact, I like proof for just about anything before I'll believe it. I guess I'm also a stickler for accuracy. I think people should say what they mean and mean what they say. I'm not an exaggerator.
I tend to be somewhat formal. To me, chivalry is not dead. In fact, I believe predictable customs are what allow people to tolerate each other. Granted, there will always be change, but the more slowly things evolve, the more comfortable it is, especially for people like me.
I suppose I'm pretty cautious. I like to do my homework. When I'm in the market for something substantial, like a car or a computer, I thoroughly study the options. I read consumer reports. I talk to people, read magazines, get brochures, compare features and prices, until I'm convinced that I'm getting the best performance and the best deal. I don't mind that process. In fact, I like it. It's kind of fun. The only time it's unpleasant is when someone is with me who is impatient. I don't like to be rushed. I would rather not decide than make a wrong choice. What can I say? I like things to be perfect.
I can be pretty focused and intense at work. I love getting lost in complex projects. I can sit at my desk for an entire morning without looking up. Time just flies by. I love that kind of uninterrupted flow. But I've got to do it with my door closed. If my door is open, people walk in and distract me. I'm also very curious. When I learn something new, I like to explore the mechanisms that make something work. I'm fascinated by lots of things. Technology, physics, computers, and this complex world we live in. I also know how to take things apart and put them back together, even without instructions.
I consider myself someone with a lot of insight. I look at situations and quickly ask myself what-if questions. I can think 3, 4, or 5 steps down the road to consider what might possibly happen. This helps avoid uncomfortable situations, especially for me.
Not too tough, was it? A thinker is easy to spot. They're indirect, like the relators, more low-key, more reserved. But unlike the relators, they're much more guarded about expressing emotion. Thinkers are very fact-oriented. And if you could see them, they're more formal and limited in their physical gestures, too. Now we only have one behavioral style left. I've saved the one that's easiest to spot for last.
You could say my motto is, don't waste my time.
And I'd say my motto is, leave out the labor pains, just give me the baby.
That's it. Just cut to the chase. I'm definitely short on patience, especially when it's something I really want. And I want everything done yesterday.
Me too. I'm so busy juggling projects and phone calls that I can be pretty demanding on the people around me. But I'm willing to reward them if they deliver the results I'm looking for.
In business, I have a knack for selling my ideas downstream first and then getting people to work hard. My favorite days at the office are the ones in which I'm totally involved with people laying options before me. All I do is make decisions and send them out to produce results.
People learn to understand and live with us. I don't mean any harm by my insensitivity. It's just that life is short and my list of accomplishments is long. If I took the time to consider everyone's feelings, I'd need a secretary just to explain things to my secretary.
I'm extremely busy right now. Call me back in 20 minutes. I guess you could say I'm rather abrupt at times, but time is money.
You know, I hate when my time is wasted. My worst days at the office are when everyone around me seems to be slowing down as I'm speeding up. They need help. They don't understand their tasks. They need hand-holding. Sometimes I want to fire everyone and start from scratch. But who can afford the lost time and productivity? Besides, I have to keep reminding myself that no one is perfect, not even me.
Yes, those were the directors, weren't they? So, now you're more acquainted with the four types. Director, thinker, socializer, relator. Which type is best? Clearly, none of the four styles is perfect. None is the way. All have their advantages and disadvantages, admirers and critics. That's fine because we need people with these different perspectives. Just think, if we were all directors, we'd all want to be in charge, but there'd be no one to boss. If everybody was a socializer, there'd be fun galore, but it's possible that nothing would get done. If everyone was a relator, there'd be calm and order, but not much adrenaline. And if everyone was a thinker, we'd all be thorough and accurate, but we'd also be seen as aloof perfectionists. Each style has its pluses and minuses. Directors excel in exerting control and making quick decisions, but they can be pretty heavy-handed in their personal dealings. Socializers, warm as they are with people, are sometimes disastrous with detail. A relator lends calm to most situations, but often not much energy. And a thinker is great at analyzing problems, sometimes where no big problems even exist. Any of the four can get a job done, but each uses a different route to reach the goal. Let's say, for instance, that the task is to prepare an airliner for takeoff. How do you think each of the four would handle the cockpit checklist? Well, you can bet that a thinker pilot will personally focus like a laser on the most critical factors on the checklist. Then he'll use any remaining time to review the less crucial ones. The director, by contrast, probably won't want to personally go through the checklist. He'll delegate it to a junior crew member who'll report back in a format chosen by the director. That way, the director is free to stay on top of other facets of flight preparation. A socializer pilot would do the checklist while chatting with his crew. He also might wait until the last moment to start the checkoff because of his usual difficulty budgeting his time. A relator would personally go through each step and in the order listed, which is probably what the creator of the checklist had in mind. Let's spend a little more time practicing our identification skills. We'll listen to a brief vignette. It takes place around the coffee bar at a training seminar, just before the seminar is about to begin. The first person you'll hear is Tom, the seminar leader. He interacts with four people. One's a socializer, one's a thinker, one's a director, and one's a relator. Your job is to identify which one's which. Here goes. Good morning.
Good morning.
You're here early. Have you been waiting long?
No.
They told me that we'd have about a half an hour for coffee and donuts, and then I'll begin at about 8:30.
That sounds right.
I'm Tom.
I'm Ann.
So, Ann, have you been with your company long?
6.5 years.
Excuse me. Oh, hello, Ann. Is this the training seminar for the sales department?
Yes.
Oh, great. I've really been looking forward to this. I think it'll really be helpful for both work and at home. Oh, is that coffee fresh? Is it for us?
It must be.
Well, I think I'll help myself. Would anyone like?
No, thanks.
Sure, I'll take a cup.
Oh, coming right up. So, are you our presenter today?
Yeah, I'm Tom.
Oh, yes, I've heard all about you. I saw your picture, but you look a lot thinner in person. I'm Bob. It's really a pleasure to meet you at last. They said you have quite a background in the field. I have a feeling this is going to be really helpful, both for work and at home. Although I hope it doesn't involve too much role-playing in front of the group. I'm not very good at that.
Hey, is this the sales seminar? Or is everybody here because there's free coffee? I hope you left some for me, because I'm useless in the morning without my black poison. Hey, Bob! Ann, and...
Tom.
Tom! Oh, Tom! Welcome, welcome. We've heard great things, and we don't intend to be disappointed. So, I heard you talking about role-playing. Is there going to be a lot of role-playing here? You all better hold me back so I don't get too carried away here. I'll tell you, last time I was at one of these things, I embarrassed myself completely. Like, just give up and crawl under the table. See, I was doing a little role play, playing a supervisor, and I figured, might as well have some fun, huh? So I started doing my impersonation of the big boss. And of course, everyone loved it when, lo and behold, who do you think comes walking through the open door of the conference room? Big hoo-ha himself! Oh, my luck! The one day a month he actually comes by here. Boy, did I eat that one.
Good morning. Are you Tom?
Yeah.
Tom, I'm scheduled to be somewhere else by 10:30. Will you be done by then? If not, can the seminar be repeated next month so those of us who can't stay will have another chance to sit in? There are plenty who aren't here, so you might have to reschedule in any case.
Deborah, that's a shame. Isn't there any way you can work it out to stay until the end?
No, Debbie, don't worry. I'll be here pretty much until the end. That is, if Tom here keeps it exciting. And I'll tell you all about whatever you're going to miss. I'll fill you in on all the gory details.
And make sure you get copies of the handouts ahead of time. You do have handouts, don't you, Tom?
Okay. Judging by the verbal and vocal clues, what's the style of Anne, the first woman we heard? What's Bob's style? Charlie's? And Deborah's, the last person? Anne appears to be the classic thinker. She shows a disinterest in small talk. She's more guarded, formal, and generally self-contained. Bob, on the other hand, volunteered information about his personal feelings and with his sigh and his earnestness, showed himself to be relatively open, yet with the hesitation and soft voice that suggests a relator. Charlie, the talkative fellow who headed straight for the coffee amid a stream of stories and self-admissions, seems to be a socializer. He likes being the center of attention. His speech is rapid, expressive, and full of his own feelings. And lastly, there was Deborah, who strode in as if she had called the meeting. Her behavior suggests she's a director. Strong, sure, and in command, she spoke very confidently. Although she was only a rank-and-file attendee, she sought to influence the agenda. That's a director for you. Let's do one more quick exercise on identification. This time we'll hear the same speech delivered by four different people, our four different types. The scene is a hotel staff meeting, and the hotel manager is opening it. Here he is.
I'd like to welcome you all and to say that I'm thrilled to have you all gathered in one room at last. In a hotel like this, it's important that everyone in the different departments have a sense of what everyone else is doing. We're all working together to make this one of the city's premier establishments. Today, we're going to take some time to go over just how this organization works. Then I'll take any questions you have or topics that you would like to discuss briefly. Then we'll break into smaller, brainstorming groups to develop ways to improve what we offer to our guests. Last, we'll come back together for a final discussion of goals and plans.
So what are the clues to this person's behavioral type? I think it's safe to say he's self-contained, not warm and expressive. That eliminates socializer and relator. Does he sound like a director, stating his opinions emphatically? No. Does he sound like a thinker, who most often speaks in a fairly monotone and methodical voice? Yes. You can also tell he's a thinker from his clipped, clearly articulated phrases. There are many pauses between sentences. And there was little warmth in words that connoted warmth, like welcome, thrilled, and together. He also made a strong emphasis on the agenda sequence, stressing the words today, then, and last. Now let's listen to the exact same welcome, at least the words will be the same, done by another one of our types. Which one is this?
Okay, I'd like to welcome you all and say that I am thrilled to have all of you gathered in one room at last. In a hotel like this, it's important that everyone in the different departments have a sense of what everyone else is doing. We are all working together to make this one of the city's premier establishments. Today, we're going to take some time to go over just how this organization works. Then I'll take any questions that you have or topics that you'd like to discuss briefly. Then we'll break into smaller brainstorming groups to develop ways to improve what we have to offer our guests. And last, we'll come back together for a final discussion of goals and plans.
Pretty different style of welcome, wasn't it? This woman was clearly a socializer. She sounded playful, and she had a lot of variety in her vocal style, that is, in her pace, pitch, and volume. She had flowing rhythms, casual pauses, and run-on sentences. She used vocal nuance to create images in the phrases, gathered in one room, hotel like this, one of the city's premier establishments, smaller brainstorming groups. There was also a strong emphasis on the word we, and she gave us a sense of a performance. Now let's listen to another style of delivery.
I'd like to welcome you all and to say that I'm thrilled to have all of you gathered in one room at last. In a hotel like this, it's important that everyone in the different departments have a sense of what everyone else is doing. And we're all working together to make this one of the city's premier establishments. Today, we're going to take some time to go over just how this organization works. Then I'll take any questions you have or topics that you would like to discuss briefly. And then we'll break into smaller brainstorming groups to develop ways to improve what we offer to our guests. Last, we'll come back together for a final discussion of goals and plans.
This is undoubtedly a director. He spoke fairly fast and full-voiced. His emphasis was on the verbs. Welcome, have a sense, make, go over, take any questions, break, improve, come back together. There was a steady momentum, even impatience in his voice. Each sentence was spoken straight through with brief pauses in between. And there was an emphasis on the word I. Now, by process of elimination, you know who's coming up next. Let's listen to a relator do the same opening speech.
I'd like to welcome you all and to say that I am thrilled to have all of you gathered in one room at last. In a hotel like this, it's important that everyone in the different departments have a sense of what everyone else is doing. We're all working together to make this one of the city's premier establishments. Today, we're going to take some time to go over just how the organization works. Then, I'll take any questions you have or topics that you'd like to discuss briefly. Then, we'll break into smaller brainstorming groups to develop ways to improve what we offer to our guests. Last, we'll come back together for a final discussion of goals and plans.
That was definitely a relator. She was soft-spoken and slow. You could tell she was relishing the meaning of her words, especially adjectives like thrilled, important, premier, and smaller. She added meaningful pauses within sentences. There was a warm emphasis on words that link people, such as welcome you all working together, any questions you have, and come back together. She emphasized we and you. So how did you do on those two exercises? Are you getting good at spotting the clues to our four behavioral types? Now, if you really want to get the most out of the rest of this program, you'll need to have a critical fix on where you fall in this system of four distinct behavioral styles. In the next segment of this program, I'll help you get a better handle on where that is and where your assets are. I'll also offer you some personal empowerment pointers on how to overcome the limitations of your particular style. When you know where you're coming from, and you're able to identify where the other person is coming from, you'll then be able to understand the best ways to adapt to that person's style. In other words, you'll know how to apply the platinum rule of doing unto others as they want to be done unto. And that will enable you to make any encounter with another person more effective and enjoyable, which is what this program is all about.